You may not know it, but you make hundreds of decisions that drive business every day. Where you buy, where you work, how you work, who you work with, what you'll champion, what you'll accept, and where you'll take your stand. Together, these hundreds of decisions become thousands, then millions, and when they start to flow in the same direction, there's no stopping the wave. So what will be your decision? How should business evolve? Do we show up to build a better world or just cash the checks? Can business be conscious and capitalist? That's really up to you, isn't it? This is The Decision. Welcome to The Decision. I'm here with Brett Green and Red Rusak, the co-founders of New Tech Seattle, which has since morphed into New Tech Northwest, which I would describe as the premier meetup organization for technology in the Pacific Northwest. And to start, to dive into this, I think to set some context for our listeners, I'd love to hear more from both of you about how the organization was founded and how you two met to found it.
Wow.
I'll start.
Yeah.
So I was living in Boulder, Colorado.
Who's talking right now? For all the listeners out there.
We have to do the red and green thing.
So. Right. Right.
Yeah. So I'm green, even though we say red and green, I guess.
And this is red.
Okay. We'll address you as red and green.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was living in Boulder, Colorado. I was intending to move to Seattle, put out a note on Facebook saying I just want to meet cool people, personally or professionally. Somebody connected me to this great guy who's putting on hackathons for AT&T in Seattle. And he was generous enough to do a Skype chat with me. And he basically said, you need to talk to Red and a couple other people and you're golden. And I said, great, would you mind connecting me? And he did. And Red was one of the people who were gracious enough to do a Skype call with me. When I told people I was coming, I mentioned that I wanted to bring New Tech because I'd sat in the audience of this event for 6 years in Colorado. And it was spectacular. And we could get into why, but that would be a whole other way to turn around, but it was very heartful and valuable and effective, and it really brought the Boulder community together. And I was happily surprised nobody had done it in Seattle, because it did exist in San Francisco, some other places. It was originally started in New York in 2004. So when I mentioned it, Red had gone to the one in New York, and he said, "Hey, I've been to this one in New York. It was great." And by the way, I created a meetup group a year ago. There's 150 people signed up to nothing. And he said, I really want to do this, but I don't know what to do. And I said, well, you know, you're the startup concierge of Seattle, which he still is. And I mean, you could get into his background with the multiple meetups he started. He actually started the original Women in Tech, which is now run by other people and other things he's built and handed off. And still edits Startup Digest, which he could talk about. But those things keep him in the mix, and his passion and his heart for Seattle and for the startup community.
Keep going, Brad.
Really, you know, there's the one cool thing about Seattle, not that there's only one, but one of them, is that so many people are contributing in different ways, and they're really passionate about what Seattle's about. And Red's spent his whole life here and was around the startup scene when it was first happening, and really helped to grow the community aspect of that so that people had that as part of what was happening. So I don't want to totally speak for him, but that was my impression. And so I was very impressed with Red and was very grateful that he took that first phone call and said, I want to do this. He's like, I want to do it too. And that was in October of 2011, maybe. And that was July. And then I moved in October, and our first event was the following February.
Did you move to help make this happen? It was the impetus for the move?
No.
No?
Okay. There were multiple impetuses, but I have a give first attitude, and I had gotten so much from that event. I knew that it was a way to give back to the community instead of just coming and getting a job somewhere. I also knew that my early background was in radio and the music industry, and I helped build the music scene, the underground alternative music scene in Las Vegas in the late 80s as a music director and then program director at KUNV, the college station. And that had me bringing bands to town and doing things where I was on stage. And I also realized coming into a new city, when you're a face on stage and people see your face, then when I would go to other things, they'd know who I was. Because I knew that part of what I was going to be doing would be business development and meeting people. And it's a lot easier to walk in a room and people already know who you are than to walk around and just try to connect with people.
So basically you reached out to me because you were looking for a job and needed to get on stage. I see how it is. There it is.
So we've got Brett on a plane to Seattle or maybe hitchhiking. I don't know how you're getting here. And Red, you're a serial organizer is what I'm hearing.
Right? Wow.
You've organized
That's a good term.
A lot of things. And Brett's going to come help power New Tech Seattle. Describe your impetus for starting that meetup group in the first place.
It's a good question. Well, I think for starters, I had a thing for starting community events and organizations since I was like 8 years old. I mean, my parents used to kick me out of the house every summer saying, you're going to leave for 2 months and not come back. I thought it was because they loved me. And so, every summer I would learn how to start groups and organizations wherever I was. And it was like a training thing, religious group thing. And then I wasn't always in Seattle, right? I lived in New York, Israel for a year, New York for about seven. And when I, met my wife to be and we decided to move back to Seattle, I saw a lack of tech community organizations, right? There was like Seattle 2.0 by Marcelo Calpucci at the time. You had a Seattle Tech meetup that was running by Chuck and Gaurav. That had discontinued its frequency towards around 2009 when I showed up here. So at that point, I decided, okay, like I'm a Seattleite. I want to stick up for these folks. Let's get some serial startness under my, my purview. So I started like the Seattle WordPress meetup. I got a Scotch meetup that was for people who liked whiskey and the founding community. And eventually, it's turned into, let's just get this domain Seattle Tech meetup.
Right.
Because the New York Tech meetup was ridiculous. It got everyone together. It was the biggest one. And somebody, I think it was Marcelo, I was at one of their Seattle 2.0 events, and it was like an annual awesome thing. And I was like, hey, have you met the guys from Seattle Tech? Is that still thing? He's like, if you want to do something, just start it. Mm-hmm. Like, don't talk about doing it. Just do it. So I got the domain like the next day, started focusing on it, ended up, getting hired by GeekWire, got a little distracted, ended up starting my own thing, Startup Seattle, but still never crossed the hurdle until this guy, Mr. Green, is like, listen, we got to do this. You're squatting on a domain here, and if you don't do it, I'm going to do it under a different name. And he said it in such a loving way that I was like, all right, fine. I don't know this guy, but I can't do everything on my own, and it's nice to have somebody willing to step up and be a leader rather than a feeder. Mm-hmm. So in the words of, Brad Feld, as a leader goes, he didn't give me another choice.
Right.
So that's really
what I literally said was, I think we should do this and I'm going to come in town, do this. And I really like you to do it with me. And he said, well, if you do it, I'm like, you're not listening to me. I'm doing this and I want to do it with you. If you don't want to do it, I will still do it. But I think it'd be a lot more fun and impactful to do it together. And he was like, oh, well, basically, if you're going to do that, tell me what to do and I'll jump into it too. And it would not be what it is today without what, I'm sure what both of us did, but specifically what Red had done in the past in the city and what he brought to launching it. Because part of the success in our launch, our first event, we had 250 people. Our second event, we had 350 the next month. That is because we believe in community and we walk our walk. And so the first thing we did was made a list of the organizations in the tech community that are already here, because a big part of what we're doing is we're the umbrella for the tech community. And so we are totally not about scarcity or competition. We don't believe we have competition. Are there other things, events, the same nights as ours? Sure. But we believe that everybody finds what they need to find. And so we are the place to come and find out about all the great resources, including events and people and companies to come to. And so we started out by looking at, I had a hunch based on what I knew in Boulder and what I read about different startup communities that was kind of similar everywhere. And then Red confirmed that there's a lot of silos. So there's all these people doing really great things. Their heads down on what they're doing. It's not that they don't want to connect. It's just that they don't really know how. They don't have a way to do that. And Red and I both have connection and community building in our blood, and we love being that catalyst of seeing these dots and putting them together and taking a person, a company, whatever it is, and connecting it to something that helps to make it go further and get better.
But long story short, we basically decided for our first event, we're going to promote everyone else's event. Mm-hmm. And then in that regard, everyone else was like, hey, can I show up at your event and promote my own? Right. So a lot of the people who showed up to our first event were people trying to promote their own. And then they found out this is pretty freaking cool. They're promoting us. Let's send our people here if they can't make it to ours. So it's kind of like it was a good marketing campaign to a certain degree. And, you know, originally we were going to partner with WTIA. I'd like to say this right now. We gave them an opportunity to make this their event. Even they recognized this is not something that can be owned by any organization. This has to be an agnostic group that has no agenda other than the community.
So, and that's why it works.
Yeah.
So one of the things that brought, you know, that made us think this would be a great fit for the decision is that in building that organization, there's a definite founding credo in the middle of it, right? And I've heard it mentioned in events I've been to and working with you on occasional projects in the past, that it's a give first approach. And if we dig into your founding story, we see phrases like giving first, meaningful relationships, collaborative culture, inclusive and impactful. These are all quotes from your website. This sounds like a conscious capitalism conference. And as we'll get into a little bit later, often tech takes a tack that's almost the opposite, right? That's a little more aggressive and unfeeling even. Meanwhile, New Tech Seattle, which has grown into New Tech Northwest, has been, it's really taking kind of a conscious capitalism approach, not by going to the conscious capitalism website or reading the book and saying, we're going to do that. You've come to these values natively. I'm curious where those came from, right? Where you drew from, what inspiration, you've mentioned Brad Feld as a potential inspiration there, or whether it just felt right and you got these articulated and you're like, that's it, let's go.
I think it's a tough one to answer because it's like the very essence of our being. Mm-hmm. You know, we're the organizers, so clearly we're going to put everything we are into what we're organizing. Right. I think the challenge is, and this is something that we have to consider when if whoever's listening to this wants to try to put their own self into whatever they're doing. I was having coffee this morning with somebody, and he's like describing this amazing search for a job opportunity and how he wants to work for a specific company that came out of Techstars, right, that delivers fish to people rather than, you know, you having to fight for it in a market and bid. And I was like, listen, man, this isn't just a job. It's what you love. And he goes, yeah, but this company specifically cares about the planet and they want to make the world a better place. I go, yeah. Mm-hmm. So let me tell you this. I know people at Salesforce who think that they're saving the planet by making the database and, you know, CRM possibilities at major companies easier and giving companies some idea of who the heck their customers are. They would say they're really helping these companies be more loyal to their customers. And what I realized was that when you find something you love, it doesn't make it better or worse in any other company. It's what you love, right? And I don't want to get too off like hippieistic here, but when I thought about this event, the thing that Brett and I needed to do was not only make it something that we loved, but try to instill into other people that there's nothing but love when it comes to community. Mm-hmm. Like it doesn't have to be altruistic. It doesn't have to be, I mean, our agenda could very well be that we want to make as much money off of every person who attends and suddenly the event is no longer valid. So what we have historically done is keep record low pricing, you know, always made sure there was drinks and food, especially the wine thing. We think there's some correlation between the heavy attendance of women in tech and the fact that we have a lot of wine in the beginning rather than just beer heavy pizza events, and make it just really focused on spreading. Everybody can be included. Everyone can have a piece of this. Everyone can get up and do a shout out and talk about their thing. And so when we started doing it that way and describing it as like, this is why I love it, suddenly everyone's like, this is why I love it. And this is why I love it. And we just listened to everyone's feedback and just kept that ball rolling until we locked into a perfect template.
So it's definitely worked, right? It's the fastest growing meetup group in meetup.com history, correct? Not Seattle Tech.
I know monthly group.
Yeah. Monthly group.
I don't know if it's all overall, because there's actually, you know, like Google has a group that literally is like all over the world with Google developers. It's probably bigger.
Right. But in terms of rate of growth, it's been...
Yeah, we're the fastest growing monthly event in meetup.com history. Yeah, they mentioned that to us.
You've been to the White House.
That's what got us to the White House.
Yeah. The Obama White House, to be clear, which is, we won't get into politics, but it's a different White House than the one we have.
We were at the first ever tech meetup at the White House, mm-hmm. and it was the last year of the Obama administration, so we're not sure when the second one's going to occur.
Got it.
Yeah, well, or if we make the cut.
You know? Right. Well, we do know that it will be coal-powered.
So that's
all. But yeah.
Can I say one thing real quick about what Red was just talking about? So the other piece besides when you mentioned Give First, I think the other, the core of it, that's conscious capitalism for us without doing, well, I would say not consciously, but actually it is conscious because we've, there's a few pieces I'd like to mention because I think it might be helpful for people. So the first thing is that along with Give First, we're we first and not me first. Right. And the underlying philosophy of everything we do and we create for the community is what are you up to and how can I help? Or how can we help? And because that we, and what I'm saying is stuff we say on stage every month in Bellevue, in Tacoma, in Seattle, it's drums that we beat. And if you want to know what our secret sauce is, I think there's a few elements to it, but the biggest secret sauce that we have is, and Red already alluded to it, it's sounds goofy, it's love. Mm-hmm. And that's our secret sauce is really love because, and we'll stand on stage and say, your job is to pour love on these presenters. And the presenter's job is to inspire you by the cool things that they're doing so that you'll go do cool things. And also for you to celebrate, for all of us in the room to celebrate this cool, innovative, amazing stuff is happening in our city, in our region, in our backyard. And therefore we can all be happy about it, be proud of it, and support the people doing that because they're helping make the ecosystem better for everybody. And then that can inspire us to go do our piece that's going to build that too.
Yeah, Hans, I would just also add, you know, I'm looking at the agenda for our discussion today. And one of the things is recommending a book. I hate to jump the gun, but right. Most of this is really based on learnings from Startup Communities by Brad Feld. I'll give credit where it's due. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a whole concept about what you should be and what role you should play and how you should act. If you haven't read that book and you're interested in community, or if you're just a fan of doing the right thing and love to learn about how other companies and communities are cultured, read this book. Highly recommended it.
Great, great. So it's doing well. It's been powered by this ethic to a large degree.
I basically decided he was going to run off and make this his full-time thing. And I was still going to have the opportunity to advise, but my motivation was going to be pure. I wasn't getting any hand-me's or give-me's. Maybe if I helped find a sponsor, I'd get some return off of that. But for the most part, my involvement was pure. I wanted to continue to be a part in the community and not lose that either when I joined this company. Because I was at Aptentive long before we got deep into the decision for New Tech Northwest. And I even asked my CEO at the time, what should I do? And he says, you should still stay involved. Mm-hmm. Just because you have a full-time job does not stop you from being in the community. And this forces me now every month, unless I'm flying somewhere else in the world for work, I'm there. No excuses.
Right. And it's grown beyond Seattle to Tacoma, to the East Side, Bellevue.
And Portland, an affiliate.
Portland's an affiliate.
Yeah, so we meant, so Seattle, Bellevue, and Tacoma are New Tech Northwest kids, mm-hmm. and Portland's the cousin.
Got it.
So the Tube 10 Comerford, who started it, and he now has a partner in Portland, he and I had known each other before, so I'd already known him for about 8 years, and he had moved to Portland long before I could come to Seattle, and he saw what was happening the first couple months and that we were doing this. And so he came down every single month.
Oh my God.
And he drove from Portland
to check it out.
and take notes. And then he went back and built it. And so, so we mentor them and we, you know, help share sponsors with them and things like that to help them grow. But they've done a really amazing job. And I think they've been going 3 years now and they have over 6,000 members. So, They're part of what we do, but they're also autonomous at the same time.
Okay. And Brett, you're basically running the organization on a day-to-day basis.
Yes.
Then. Got it. Mm-hmm. So before we jump into some specific scenarios about how that Give First ethic has applied, where it's worked really well, where it's met some challenges, is you've had to make decisions about where to direct all this tech energy. I'm curious if you could sum up New Tech in a singular core purpose, right? If you had to say our core purpose is blank, which not coincidentally is one of the tenets of conscious capitalism, have a clear sense of your core purpose. What would you say is the core purpose of New Tech?
Well, since you had a hand in making sure that the website says certain things, I'm going to let you go first on this one.
Well, you know the tagline. So, I mean, there's a reason why we call it the heart of I forgot the tagline. the heart of
the Northwest tech community.
Yeah, I'm trying. I'm having Northwest and tech.
You tweet too much, man.
Around.
You keep putting those short sentences out there. You lose them.
Jumping around. But we're the heart of the Northwest tech community. By that, for us, what it means is the human piece is first, and the other part of the heart is that it's kind of driving everything else and is connected to everything else. And so
you sound like a true Seattle hippie, man.
Kind of how we look at it.
I think it's really good as a statement because it's very clear. There's a stake in the ground, but it's very expansive. You can fit a lot under it.
Oh, it's come on. That mission statement, it's beautiful and it sounds lovey-dovey. Yeah. But if we're trying to be somewhat capitalistic in describing what our business model is, it's a front door to the tech community.
Right.
It's the front door to the tech community. And that I think, while we're the heart, anyone can say that. It's very important that Brett and I have defined that we're opening doors for others, and that this meetup is the largest way we can guarantee a door is going to be open every month for people who are new. That 80,000, 120,000 new people from Amazon, eventually they're going to jump out and start their own things. Mm-hmm. People from Microsoft coming over to the Eastside meetup who are planning on starting their first thing, they have to walk through the door into the tech community, and the only way they can do that on a regular basis is New Tech Northwest.
So there's this tremendous amount of tech energy, right? It's grown a lot, it's spread, and now you can direct that energy in a lot of different ways, right? You set the tone, you sort of say, here's what we want to highlight, here's what we want to focus on, here's the themes we want in our event. One of the things I'd like to focus on a bit is the coalition to help the homeless that New Tech started and how that came together and why that cause, right? There's lots of great causes out there, environmental, what have you. Why that particular cause? Why direct the energy in that direction? And how has that gone? And then I'm going to get into your personal experiences with doing the rescue missions and what your perspective was on those and what you learned through them.
So, yeah, I'm going to defer to Brett 100%. Okay. I will not lie to the audience. I have not done one of these missions officially through New Tech. So this is 100% you, baby.
And Red has a full-time job and...
No. I still do my own missions. And just never done it through New Tech.
I know. But I just mean time-wise, you're pretty stretched with...
I only have a baby and two dogs and
a second baby on the way.
He's okay.
And traveling.
Dude, the Jewish community is its like constant mission. But let's leave that for another story. Let's hear about your gospel mission and ultimately why.
So I'll tell you why, and I'll be totally frank. And Hans already knows this, that you want to talk about decisions and with startups, you look at what's working and what's not, and to be truthful, I wouldn't call it a failure, but I'd call it close to a failure. Mm-hmm. So initially what happened is we were looking for something that would give back to the greater community. So it's not just the tech community, because the tech community in Seattle is affecting in a lot of positive and negative ways, especially around housing. And to be just perfectly honest and vulnerable about it, what happened was when I first moved here, I wasn't in a really good financial position, and I was given I got a card for my birthday from my parents with $100 in it, and my wife and I went out to dinner, and when we came back to the car and downtown, there was a man I'm going to guess was in his 70s, who's African-American, who was sleeping, basically one spot away from where our car was. And it broke my heart. And I just, nobody should have to be sleeping on the street. And it just killed me that in this day and age, with the wealth, especially in the country that we live in, that anybody should be living on a freaking sidewalk, much less somebody who's in their 70s and dealing with the elements, dealing with the younger people who are also, maybe kind of thuggish that are homeless that they'd have to deal with and things. And we were talking to him for a little while. And while we were talking to him, I just kind of, slipped him the 100 and was, holding his hand. And we got in the car and my wife said, "Did you just give him the $100 your parents gave you?" And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "Why'd you do that?" And she wasn't upset about it, but I just said, "He needs it more than I do." no matter, you know, what we're going through, we'll figure it out. But I'm about to get into a car and drive home and open a door under a roof and lay in a bed and go to sleep. And I don't want to be him one day. And any of us, you know, could end up that way, depending on circumstances. And so that was something that really affected me. It also, just to be frank, it really bothers me that the majority of the African-American men that I see in Seattle are homeless. And, you know, I grew up with African-American friends, and I didn't think about it. And so it's interesting to be older and realize, you know, how segregated things are, and how, you know, a lot of people don't have the same opportunities to just have a basic life with, you know, as much as stress we think we have, it's not the same kind of stress as a young black male trying to get a job, or, you know, trying to just do the things that we take for granted that we do. And so those kind of factors made me realize that this is not something that I would give up on, because I didn't want to do something philanthropic just to kind of do it. And I know from just life and entrepreneurship that the bumps are going to happen in the road, and the curves are going to happen, and you can't, you know, bail on it. So with that, like I said, it's kind of, I would say it's failed at this point, but I still haven't given up on it. I've been incredibly disappointed. We have,
let's walk us through the structure of the program, what
sure.
it was and how you mixed tech executives and homeless people and brought them together.
Give it a shot though, because if it has failed, a lot of it has to do with, I think, how it's been perceived. So can I, as an outsider, tell you what I thought it was?
Sure.
As an experiment, because I never went on it, because I've again, my own missions. This, to me, appeared to be an invite to the community, where it didn't matter where you are, who you were in the community, executive or not, that you can join up at a certain place and time to go on a mission along with other people in this community that were aware of it, and go out and help them. And you learn to create community through that. These are the people now that were by your side helping you on this mission. But there was no other agenda other than it's another activity that you could do to not only meet people, but meet them in a circumstance that is incredibly valuable. That's what I perceived it to be. Mm-hmm. And saying that out loud, my question would be, once you describe it, why do you think it's failed? Why would you even assume it's failed?
So because what it is so Union Gospel Mission has been doing this for years. They have four vans that go out every night into Seattle and generally hit the same areas of the city this around the same time each night of the week. So, you know, Monday at 8 o'clock, it's going to be around this area. And so the people know that. The van drivers know the people on the streets because they're out all the time. The back of the van is stocked with necessities like toiletries, toothpaste, toothbrush, sandwiches, blankets, you know, clothing, things that you would think of. And their only mission is to go serve and help the people. They are connected to a shelter, and the people know that they do that, but they don't talk about it much, and they don't preach it. And they're not on a mission to pull the people off the streets. Their mission is to let people know they have a way out if and when they're ready to get off the streets. So they're not trying to convince them, but they know when they're ready. And what happens is they build relationships, and there's a point where somebody says, you know what, for instance, actually a success, our last one we did last month, they actually brought someone back to the mission, which has never happened on anyone before. Because somebody said, I'm done and I need help and I'm ready to do something different. And so they came back. So that was a success.
Sounds like success to
me. That was a success. Yeah. So, well, the failure piece of it is it's eight people in a van once a month. And the first 6 months were pretty strong. And the last 6 months have been really challenging to get more than three people in the van. And, you know, and our lists, not counting Portland, are 24,000 people. And I'm like, how are we connecting with 24,000 people and we can't get eight people in a van? And so it's part of what I look at it is the night we had was a Monday night. It's 7:30 until 11:30 at night. You're going to some of the worst parts of the city. It's not going to speak to everybody. And we know that. So that's part of it. Is people's own schedules, their own lives, what they're able to do versus what they want to do. So one thing we did do is we moved it to other nights. The last one that went out that was successful, that was on a Thursday night. Then we added in a lunch program of like, well, you could come, we'll pick a day of the month, and from 11 a.m. to 1:30, you can show up. We need 8 people, again, to serve lunch. So same thing a lot of people do on Thanksgiving, but hey, guess what? People eat every day, so you don't have to wait till November. And same thing, we had one person who signed up for that. So we're not giving up on it, but the current shift is we're going to continue promoting the programs they do, but sending the people directly to Union Gospel Mission so they can plug in where it might work for their schedule. Because you can do it any day of the week, and there are a couple different options, and I think that makes it easier for people. Because my initial thought was people want to do something, but they don't know how, and it needs to be made easy. So if we can have a 1-3-step process that you can do something to serve, that not necessarily everybody, but let's just say even 10% of the people found that to be helpful in their lives, valuable for them and the people that they were serving, then we're doing a good thing. So we're not abandoning it by any means, but there's a matter of looking back and going, okay, well, this isn't getting the goal that we were after. So how do we fix this so that it can get a little more traction, do more? And not that we wouldn't maybe go back to doing this again. The other piece of that is that I'm driving it and my bandwidth is really low. So if somebody else was helping me to manage that piece of it, then there might be more that we could do with it. And that could be something that happens in the future.
In your experiences in going through the gospel mission, the rescue mission of, you know, meeting homeless in their environment and doing it once, twice more, what was the thing that for you in that experience was most surprising going in?
The most unexpected thing was probably how many people choose to live on the street. Because when I think about it, I think I wouldn't last a day or two. You know, I don't know what would happen. Maybe I'd just starve because I wouldn't know what to do. But it's not an easy thing to do. And there are people, along with that, a lot of people live in RVs, which I didn't know, which is one way they do it. One thing I did kind of know, but I got a different take on, was the level of people who are working and living on the streets because they can't afford housing. And, you know, I knew in general that a medical bill or, you know, one paycheck away from the street kind of thing could be real for a lot of people. But for instance, I met a man who I'm going to guess was in his mid-60s who lived in an RV that doesn't, you know, if they do drive them, they don't drive them around too much. And they can hook generators up to them and things like that. That was close to where he had to work part-time, couldn't work full-time because he has cancer and he found a job close to where he has to do chemo. So, and he has a bike. And a lot of homeless people have bikes and they use bikes to get around. And I'm like, that's the world that's lived. This guy was a professional. He had made lots of money in his life and he got cancer and the medical bills bankrupted him and that made it hard for him to have deposits for apartments and couldn't find a place to live and somehow ended up with a cheap RV. And he wasn't lazy. He didn't want to just stay on the street. The guy was still working partially because he wanted to, mostly because he had to pay for chemo himself. You know, was doing what he had to do. I met another guy who washed windows on skyscrapers and got hurt on the job, hurt his foot, couldn't work, and he didn't heal fast enough, so his medical insurance ran out. And so, you know, he lost his insurance, he lost his paycheck, and he didn't have a home, and he ended up in what they call the jungle here.
I'm really struck by how these worlds are so different, right? Someone takes the stage at New Tech, they're usually, you know, on some positive trajectory, we're getting funding, we're demoing cool stuff, it's all going to be sparkly and great. Meanwhile, just down the street, and sometimes from New Tech, where it's held, you know, across the street, yeah, you know, it's just such a different world. And to have one world help the other, connect them together, certainly it's a noble goal. I think one of the things, I want to kind of broaden that discussion into the role of tech in general, but before I do, if someone's listening to this and they're like, I want to help, right? I'm in tech, or I want to be part of that solution. What's the best next step for them to take? Is it to contact you, to contact Union Gospel Mission directly, or
I would say Union Gospel Mission directly, or if you go to our website under Impact, one of the things there is giving back, and you can get on a newsletter that we have. Just to let people know about opportunities that we try to do as a group, because that's part of it, is that you can do it with other people in the community. Right. Like Red was saying, it brings the community together as well as giving you a chance to serve.
So I'm going to broaden this more to the role of tech in general and actually use as kind of a bridge. You know, one of the tenets of conscious capitalism is stakeholder, you know, a wider circle of stakeholders than just me and the dollar, right? You know, more than just make money. But thinking about your, if you're a company, employees and community, which is what we're talking about here, environment, constructing a business that makes all those circles of benefit work is considerably harder than constructing a business that makes $1.10 on every dollar, right? And I think those of us at this table who've done it, right, kind of have seen that play out. Tech, as a general rule, Uber's in the news this week because Travis Kalanick has been run out of town effectively by his own board for bad behavior that's just now spilled over into the public sphere. It's kind of ugly. In town, Amazon's gotten a lot of grief for workplace practices. They sometimes get caricatured as indifferent to the human element a little bit. You know, we could keep going to Silicon Valley and the caricature of that culture that emerges from, you know, that show, which is, everyone says it's spot on. That's a real person, you know, well, they're talking
just
about.
Just real quick about Silicon Valley. Yeah. Wired did a whole giant, you know, expose of that. And they have over 100 consultants on that show that work in Silicon Valley. There literally is not a scenario on that show that didn't actually happen. As bizarre as those things look like, they learned that this happened at this company, this happened at that, and they find a way to let the story out of that.
Wow,
yeah, it's and you know, and then take San Francisco in general, where this stratification of society, where tech has really accelerated the erosion of the middle class, not done much to help it, right? Where that dichotomy we talked about is, it seems like it's further down the road than we are here. And we're still in a place where maybe in Seattle we can do something about that. So I'm curious about your sense of how much influence you and everyone listening in Seattle can have on what the Seattle tech ethic is, and how you would describe the Seattle tech ethic as different from your observation of it from a New York or a San Francisco or even a Boulder. You know, what's unique about how Seattle approaches tech? What's different? If you got here, you'd be like, this is not where I came from.
Yeah, I think the challenge has historically been choosing where to put your philanthropic equity, right? Whether that's dollar or sweat. And, you know, one of the things that I find very challenging in Seattle is that there is so many places where you can do good with both, right? But if we're trying to be insular to the tech community, the challenge is how much of your time are you going to be spending on the tech community versus the general community, right? Most people, when they're thinking about giving, you can't just be focused on yourself and what community you're in. You know, Seattle is a work-life balance. Work is tech. What's out of that? It's your life. So you probably want to give to the dog that's barking outside saying, all right, we need to help with the shelters, less euthanasia. Like, let's keep going. Let's save these pups, you know? And I think, you know, one of the things that is interesting is that there is not a lot of education around philanthropy in this community. There is a lot of it going around, but it's not like a hot, sexy topic. It's not a discussion. It's not like we have wars. Who can give more? You know, you hear about it in the news, like Bezos gave money. Wow. Or Bill Gates. But you thought that would trickle down. It doesn't. I talk to company founders all the time saying, so what's your matching program? I'm an employee. I want to give part of my salary to a charity. Will you match it? Well, we're not profitable, so we can't really do that. I'm like, are you kidding me? You have the chance to have a company. You hiring somebody is amazing. At least encourage us to give. So I talked to the people at Aptentive. We're really into the concept of giving back to the community. And one of the ideas that we ran up against, I emailed our payment platform. I think it's Gusto. I think it used to be called Zen Payroll. And they had this thing where you can give a certain dollar amount a month, right? And I'm like, I emailed them, like, that's kind of weird. Why can't we do percentages of salary? Because if I just mark it as 100 and it's a bad month, right? If I'm in sales, for example, I can't really predict what that is, right? Because sometimes people are compensated differently. And so, you know, that's interesting. Where does that come from? And I go, I believe everyone should give 10% of their money to charity. automatically. It goes into a savings account you don't touch, or automatically goes to a charity, and you get to have the fun every month of picking that charity. And that mantra does not exist here at all in Seattle. No one does it. At one point, someone called me, "Oh, you're just doing your duty because that's how you were raised." I'm like, okay, so I'm doing my duty. I don't get any pleasure from giving. I just know that it's my requirement. At this point, I've been doing it since I was bar mitzvahed, you know? So it's like, what, I got 20 years under my belt of giving. It's not because I'm giving for the sake of giving. I think it just needs to become a standard practice in this community. Everyone just gives. And that just hasn't become a thing.
Is that in contrast to other regions, New York, San Francisco, Colorado, or is it a little tighter in Seattle, for lack of a better word?
I don't know. I mean,
it kind of does have that reputation.
Yeah, it's tough. Like countries, I know there are certain countries that, you know, that's their culture, that's their mantra. But I don't think about cities. I know in New York, what I was raised around in terms of philanthropic efforts, you know, there was the charity, mm-hmm. the charity, that's where you would give it to. You know, American Red Cross was right there, just on the Northeast region, in the Eastern region. So that was an easy choice for a lot of times, especially with disasters going on. But yeah, nothing bad's really happened in Seattle to get people to surround it. It's usually when disasters happen, everyone's like, I'm going to support that. Yeah. You know, oh, let's support AIPAC tomorrow, or oh, let's support Haiti. It seems like a trend when it shouldn't be a trend. Mm-hmm. The only trend should be is where you give your 10% this month. Mm-hmm. And I've been working on it for a while, but I haven't really. Again, it's like owning the domain name Seattle Tech Meetup. I'm waiting for someone to kick my ass and say, Red, it's time for you to start putting a platform together that's give your 10%.
I hear a goal behind that to make that the normal, right? Where the question isn't, it's not why are you doing it? It might be why aren't you doing it?
Yeah.
Right? That's the new normal.
I would hope. Yeah. But again, that could just be me. And I'm in a financial place. Yeah. But I was always taught, even if you don't have it, give. Mm-hmm. Right? They always talk about two men in a desert or women in a desert. Let's go, you know, totally non-binary here, but if you're in a desert and someone else is starving next to you, you have an option. And if you have one bucket of water, bucket will save your life but kill the other, or you share it, you both die. It's not like that anymore. You know, you share your water. Right. This is a land of opportunity. We're not in a desert, guys.
We have plenty of water in Seattle.
And karma's real.
Yeah.
You pay it forward, it will come back to you 10x. Give, 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 and don't expect to get, and I guarantee you'll get. It's ridiculous. I know it's not supposed to be like selfish. I tell people I'm the most selfish guy I know when it comes to giving, because I know when I'm giving you, it's going to come back to me.
Right.
You just don't know how.
And I think Red talking about it is as important. So, you know, not that all roads lead back to Brad Feld, but quite a few do for us.
We love you,
Brad.
I
lived in Boulder for a really long time and was, you know, saw what Brad was doing in the community when he first started doing it. And what Red's talking about reminds me of my favorite Brad Feld story that I don't know if he even remembers, but when he first started doing some stuff around the community, he would have these talks. He would set up a talk at the university and somebody would interview him a little bit and he would just take questions from the audience. Totally just a casual way to like give back mentorship or help entrepreneurs. And he told this story about being at dinner with a friend, and he, you know, something came up at the dinner about some philanthropic thing that he had just done that I think was a pretty big deal. And his friend said, "Well, why aren't you telling people about this?" And he said, "It's just my thing, you know, and I don't want to seem like, you know, I think I'm cool because I did it or something like that." And his friend said, and, you know, forgive me, Brad, if you hear this and I'm, you know, paraphrasing it the wrong way, but basically his friend said, "You don't understand, people watch what you do and you're a leader." And this is before he had like written books and, you know, I don't even know if his blog was even happening at the time. So this is, you know, pre all of that stuff. And his friend said, "You're actually hurting people by not sharing it, because when other people hear that you're doing it, that lets them give themselves permission to do it themselves." And that is like one of my driving forces with New Tech and in my life ever since I heard that was what you're doing when other people see you do it. If you are someone who's a leader or someone who inspires people, you let them give themselves permission to go do that. And they may not have realized they wanted to do it, or maybe they did want to, but they hadn't done it. And they're like, "Wow, if, you know, this person," and maybe you're one of like 10 before it clicks. And they're like, "Well, all these 10 people that I believe in or care about or follow or whatever are doing this, maybe I should go do that too." And that helps one, you do these great things, and two, you feel better in your life and you're contributing in other ways. And that's one of the bases of New Tech, of the idea is that these people on stage, you're seeing what they're doing and you're inspired by what they did, and they're just people like you, and you can go, oh, wow, well, they did it. Well, all right, maybe I should let myself go take this idea and go try to build a company out of it, because you see that that's already happening. So I just wanted to mention that. It kind of ties into everything that we've been talking about, but that's a big piece of that philanthropy. I think, you know, the more Red in particular talks about that, because it's been ingrained in his life for so long, that gives people an example. And it's actually a gift to share things like that that you do, because it lets other people have permission to go do whatever their thing is that's like that.
So we've talked about, you know, some of the limitations we've seen in the tech community, that philanthropy is not necessarily an automatic normal, that there was an initial surge of interest around the homeless program, but it ebbed. You know, from your positions on stage to help be the guiding beacon for, you know, or just be an example, right, for the Seattle tech community, where have you seen the most positive, where that door's open most easily? You know, I think the Give First ethic seems to have opened doors just for people gravitating to New Tech more than other similar meetups. I can report from having gone to many that a lot of tech meetups are all about the money, and then maybe a little, you know, just a little service about anything higher level than that later. But by sort of flipping that on its head, you really, people come in the door. But in terms of when you've said, hey, let's go in this direction, or these are the kind of entrepreneurs we want to feature, the kind of products we want to feature, you know, where have you felt like, hey, we've notched some real success here in how we framed the conversation in Seattle?
I'll take a stab at this first, only because I don't want to toot our own horn in saying that we've got some secret magic sauce. If you take a look at every month, we ask people to raise their hands if they're new. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Brett, 2/3 of the people every month are new, right? 60% on average when they're raising their hand. If I'm looking at just hand statistics, I don't, what have our surveys said about people who are new every month?
I would say that it's not that high. There are months where it's that high. I think usually it's more like 20%, but we have had months. Same thing with people who are looking for jobs. So I remember there was one month that literally like 80, 90% of the people raised their hands, they're looking for jobs. Last night in Eastside, I asked that question in Bellevue, and it was only 7 people. And I was like, wow, that's the least amount of people we've ever had that were looking for jobs. So
it's hard for us to pinpoint it, right? But if we see that there's this variation, right, of hand raisers that are new versus not, what we're going to find is that it's very hard to understand the motivation behind why people come. And we've tried surveying them, but the efficacy of our survey via email is not going to tell the true story. What's going to tell the true story is we have been blessed with volume of people that are constantly looking for connections, and that we can bank on that volume continuing to grow. So even if our number was 60% new every single month or 50%, that's great. A, we've got people coming back, which beats the norm of retention, right? If we have a 30 or 40% retention rate, that's pretty sweet. I usually tell people when they're coming to our event, you can come once a quarter and you will not be alone. There are a lot of people who find, oh, Red, I'm sorry, I haven't been here in 6 months. I go, what do you mean sorry? The average is for you to come once a quarter, and everyone else who's new will fill in the gaps. And when you start creating that cyclical cycle, we've been around for 4 years. Mm-hmm. We've hit the wave is going. It's like Old Faithful at this point. We could kind of just predict the trends. You know, the volume might be a little lower because we're not marketing as hard. What we're now relying on is the organic truth that this is meeting a need, and we're not doing much to push it. We're now just focused on the infrastructure. How do we get the right people on stage? And that's where Brett has done a fantastic job. Again, you've tooted my horn this whole time, but themed months, right? What's the trend? People want to talk about VR, AR? Let's do it. Let's get only people on stage to talk about that, or women in tech. Let's just only have women in tech on stage. Oh, you want to talk about diversity or giving back? We're going to focus on organizations that are focused on like gender equality and homelessness. So we continue to bring that theme to the stage to reattract people to come back to the event. And we're always trying to stay relevant, right? We're not going to just bank on the fact we're unique. We have to keep reinventing the wheel in terms of what topic is hot for the next 3 months. And you gotta apply real early, because what is it? 8-month wait list now?
At least 9 months, yeah. depends.
Yeah. So Brett, Mr. Trendcall over here, I wish you were a VC, I'd jump in. But you know, he could predict the trends really early on in terms of what topics make sense.
Well, and we're always looking at, we're blue ocean guys. We're not red ocean guys. Mm-hmm. If you ever read the book Blue Ocean
or Green Ocean, I thought you were going with that.
The red and green. We're a red and green ocean. Put them together, and it would be blue. I know that's not technically correct, but
primary color failure.
But we do. You know, we look for what isn't being served, and is in our wheelhouse that we can help to serve. We're really blessed to be in a city that other people might think it's not a blessing, but I think it is, that when we started this, there were over 300 tech meetups in Seattle. Now there's probably more than 400. And GeekWire is a very unique thing to have in town, where you know, you've got this amazing news crew putting out information every day and keeping the pulse of what's happening across the tech community in the Pacific Northwest as well as in general. And they have, who knows, maybe 7 events, 8 events a year now that, you know, we help promote what they do too. And their events are, there's some similarities, there's lots of differences, but we're not looking to, you know, they're doing something that is really impactful and amazing in the community. And so like everything else, we want to pour gasoline on their fire. And for us, we want to see what we can do that isn't in their wheelhouse, that is in our wheelhouse, so that between us and all the other organizations in town, people are getting all sorts of ways to be fed. And
it's,
you know,
like TEDx and Ignite.
Yeah, they've got a buffet of what they can go to, and none of it is mutually exclusive. You know, we all have crossover audiences, and, you know, our theory is if you're doing good things, you're doing good things, and let's share all the good things. It's you know, not always the greatest thing. I think our numbers are lower than they were the first couple of years, because now when we first started, I think there were like 2 to 3 events you could pick every night. Now there's 5 to 10 every night. And so our blessing is that we do it every month. And so like Red said, to us, a regular comes 3 or 4 times a year. If that's not, if your job isn't sales or biz dev or recruiting where you need to go out to events, you've got a life, you've got work, you've got family, you've got travel. If you come 2 or 3 times a year, you're a regular in our eyes. And that means you had a good time, it was valuable, and you wanted to come be a part of it again. And that's really fantastic.
Great. And your culture, as you describe it, really stands out as unique, right? I mean, that you've got that, a perspective on that, that everyone's got a different perspective on tech in Seattle. And it seems that perspective, as you were both describing it, you've really turned the corner to sustain this, not just grow it. Mm-hmm. So it seems to be working.
The thing Red was kind of saying earlier without saying this directly is we're about you. Mm-hmm. And everyone's favorite topic is themselves, right? So, you know, when you come to our event and we're like, hey, you know, this event isn't just about the panel on stage, which we don't do panels. Nothing bad about them. That's just not what we do. It's not about the one speaker for an hour. Again, not bad, just not what we do. But if you come to those events, you know that's what you're going to get. You come to our event, what you know you're going to get is people who care about you, people who are trying to connect you with resources, people who are trying to help you with your career or your company. And we've been beating the drum for 4 years. That's our identity. We walk the walk. People experience it. They walk, you know, another thing that we want people to do is no matter what your energy level is and how you feel when you walk in that door, you better be higher when you walk out. And that's on us, and that's on our community. And the community makes that happen. And because it's better for them and they have a better time. And personally, I think that the environments in our events are refreshing for people, and they don't have another event to go to. We, you know, I don't know exactly the right phrase, you know, to call this, but it's almost like the church of innovation, that when you come, it's like going to church or synagogue to some degree, just in, that you're meeting your tribe and you're meeting some people who care about things you care about, and you're there to help each other.
So who's the Pope? Like, how's that work?
I don't
know. You could be co-pope, right? You know, be like, well, an episode of The Office.
Pastor Glidden.
Which is, and then the
Rabbi Red. I like that.
Yeah. It's a great question. And the answer for us, I'll speak for Red unless he changes it, is we're stewards. That's the best part. Is we are.
I don't know. I just go because it's a good time. He's getting all heavy and deep. Yeah. There's beer. There's food. There's wine. It's fun. And it's like, come on, man. I need to get away from work on a regular work night.
But why didn't you go somewhere else for the food and the drink and the getting away?
Because they're all wearing suits at the other ones. They have agendas. I don't know. This one, I just like, hey, let's meet a New Tech and then go hit happy hour after. It's become a date night. Man, they used to call it New Tech hookup. It was ridiculous. I've had so many friends. I mean, glad I'm married, honey. I love you. Because it was weird. I mean, the matchmaking capabilities between people just looking for a date or people looking for a job, it was hard to tell why they were there at one point.
Well, we have over 40% women at our events, which is not usual for tech events. No. And, you know,
it's a good sign. It's a good sign.
Definitely, people on both sides going, this might be a good place to go meet some good people.
If it's an equitable mix and it all works out and they name the twins Red and Green, you'll know you've succeeded. So I've got two more questions. One about how you stay in balance and then kind of a wild card based on news this week. First, though, you know, going up there and being stewards of that, how do you, you know, and one of the tenets of conscious capitalism is conscious leadership, right? You can't lead your organization effectively unless you bring your best self or can moderate your not great days. So I guess there's sort of two parts to this question. One, with all the demands on you when you're up there on stage, what does a not great day look like for each of you? And then how do you get back in balance with everything going on, whether it's other...
Go ahead, Red.
I've seen Brett, and Brett's seen me. When we come together, there are sometimes we show up there and we just had a bad day. It could be financial. It could be personal. There are so many things. But what changes is the moment we get on stage and we rev our engines and we just look at each other and we say to ourselves, we're about to have a good time. And I don't know what happens. The world disappears, right? Like that fourth wall is put up it's broken in front of us. We connect with the audience and we put it to the right and left of us. And it's hard to describe. I could literally get chewed out that day for doing something bad at work and just go to the event and it disappears. It melts away. It's like work is gone. This is now life. There's that work-life balance. This isn't work to me anymore. Now this is who we are. And the minute you differentiate work-life, work goes away for a second. I think that's how it works for me. Brett, I don't know if you can relate. We've never gotten this deep other than when we drink wine and hug a lot.
That's what we're here to do.
What he said.
What Red said. It's, there's just days where you're like, I'm not in a people mood. I have them, right? Everyone has them. Sometimes you must have those days and you're like, well, except I'm going to go meet 400 people and be on stage.
Yeah, and if we go, I mean, bringing it back to what we said originally, it's about love. And so, you know, if you're going to a place where people are going to love on you, I mean, another thing that comes out of this for both of us is one of the currency isn't just money. And one of the greatest things we have is hearing stories of people who came to our events and found a job, or like he said, found a date, found a new friend, found a new partner, hired somebody, discovered a new event that they went to that and they met somebody. Or, you know, we hear these stories all the time of this amazing synchronicity that happens. If people, I honestly believe life and definitely events, at least our events, and I think a lot that are not our events that I've attended, it's 80-90% showing up. And if you decide to drag your butt in there and be open, it's weird how you might only talk to one person, but man, that was the right person for you to talk to. For, you know, whatever reason, it somehow contributed to your life some way. And
have you seen the movie Trolls? Anybody?
No, I haven't.
Okay, I highly recommend you watch it. I know I have a kid, and that's probably why I watched it last night. But at one point, he's reading his book.
Your child doesn't even speak yet.
That's why you watched it five times.
Okay, he was reading a book in the corner while I was watching it. But one of the things that was interesting is there was this one troll that basically was unhappy the entire time. And everyone else was super happy around them. And at a certain point, he breaks. And the same thing with the big evil creatures that eat the trolls to be happy. The whole concept of it was that the happiness is always inside you. You just need to be in the right environment. And the one thing that's undeniable is the New Tech Northwest. When I walk into that environment, it is impossible to be depressed. It is impossible. The lighting at the hub, I don't know if it's the drinks. I mean, I don't even drink at these events anymore. I don't bother. I don't need that extra filter. It is just... unadulterated positivity. And you could have the worst day, but that friend you haven't seen in a month, that's the time you get to see them. And they walk and go, what's up? Someone's listening to you. Even that's a benefit. You had a bad day, someone's going to give you an ear.
So we'll turn it around real quick. Hans, you come. Mm-hmm. You've been to dozens of our events.
Yeah. Wild card.
So yeah. why do you come? Or if you had a bad day and you showed up, how did you, why didn't you just go home? And when you came, like, did that help? Did it hurt?
For me, the give first ethic, and I tell people this when they ask about what events should I check out, it's genuine. Right. And I think one of the challenges in this world where we're all trying to change the world, so why isn't it better yet? Because it's all we're all doing. But there's a gap often between articulated intent, and I don't think it's out of ill will necessarily, and ability to follow through on creating that environment. And New Tech succeeds, right? It's genuinely a positive give first environment. And then, right, as you were saying, it comes back to you, that ethic of give and don't expect a return. That's 200 people in the room and maybe 100 get it, but by the end of the night, all 200 are kind of in that frame of mind. And that is incredibly unique in tech, I think. I think it's really unique. And so I think that's what kind of pulls me in, even on days where I'm like, oh, I cannot even, I can't even days. And so they're energizing events, and that's key.
Thank you. Yep. So what's this wild card? I want to be wild sensitive card. To time here.
Right, exactly. We should probably end it there, but I'm going to ruin it with a wild card. Amazon just bought Whole Foods. Are those cultures going to mesh? You've been to Whole Foods. You know of Amazon.
Okay, Alaska Airlines bought Virgin.
We're going to talk about that in our next podcast.
Actually. Yeah, it's like I've seen these things time and time again. And, we're not ones to tell at all. But one thing that is exciting is we're big fanboys in the Seattle community, or at least I could say this for myself, for Amazon, in the way they're forcing everyone to think outside the box and innovate. And a brand like Whole Foods, which has a really lovely customer base, would love to see what they're going to do to drive more loyalty. You can't buy loyalty. You got to bring something new and fresh to the table. Whole Foods has done that. And Amazon has done that, combining that culture. I'm very excited to see, technologically speaking, what's gonna change on my dinner plate. Yeah.
What he said.
Great. So on that note, we'll wrap up. I want to thank you very much for taking time from your busy day, many demands, many events, many obligations to come and talk to us in one of our inaugural podcasts.
Well, thank you so much for inviting us, Hans. Yeah. It's been fantastic.
And just in time for 420 as well.
420. Let's go.
We appreciate the opportunity. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
The Decision is a podcast about conscious capitalism from Conscious Capitalism Seattle. Your host is Hans Bjordahl. Your producer and audio engineer extraordinaire is Bob Baranski, who also composed and performed our music. Jenny Martin leads our board, and Jody Ryan and Mark Williams power this and many other conscious capitalism initiatives to help redefine success in business. To learn more about conscious capitalism, visit our website at consciouscapitalismseattle.org or email us at thedecision@consciouscapitalismseattle.org.